3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
And strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. What a ball game last night. We're going to dive into that quite a bit. I'm going to be totally honest with you. It is really late right now, or early, depending on how you look at it. But, boy, it's hard to go to sleep after a game like that. That was just outstanding. So, recording this in the wee hours, but there's just so much to break down, so much to look at, so many numbers to look at, and what was a sensational ball game. And we're going to dive into this one quite a bit. We'll get lots of reaction, including Mike Montgomery himself. Back-to-back shutouts. Just amazing. And some pretty amazing numbers and facts that go along with this that make it that much more impressive. So the Mariners off on the right foot in this brief two-game series. Second game starts today, this afternoon. In just a few hours, Taijuan Walker will try and continue his dominance. And he'll face the San Diego Padres in game two of this brief two-gamer, then off to Oakland for four. So, dive into this game. We'll get lots of reaction coming up. Great conversation about pitching coming up as well with Aaron Goldsmith and Mike Blowers. It's excellent on the way. Also, Aaron Goldsmith had a chance to sit down with Pat Murphy, the manager for the San Diego Padres. Very interesting path getting there. Longtime head coach of first Notre Dame and then Arizona State, where he built a juggernaut. And he coached so many major leaguers at his time at Arizona State, including Willie Bloomquist. And he'll talk a little bit about Willie Bloomquist and what's it been like. He was at Arizona State, then went to the minors and worked his way up. Was managing at AAA this year, and when Bud Black was let go, he is hired as the Padres manager. Very interesting guy and a unique path to get here, and he has a couple good stories to tell, so that comes up as well. Well, let's dive into the ball game last night. After the off day, Mariners getting back to it, and Mike Montgomery, I mean, you can't ask for much more than what he did last time he took the mound against the Kansas City Royals. Remember that? Complete game shutout against KC. Fan 10 gave up five hits, completely dominant against the team that drafted him. And this game, too, a little wobbly to start, a little shaky as he was looking for his control. I mean, basically 50-50 splits in terms of strikes and balls, but he just kept getting it done. Padres not able to square him up and not able to get to him.
3-2, swing and a ground ball up the middle, but right there behind the bag, Brad Miller got it. The throw to first in time to get Alonso, and it's 1-2-3 go the Padres in the bottom of the sixth. Mike Montgomery, what a story tonight. No runs, no hits.
There it is. No hits through six innings, and already at that point, the Mariners have put some offense on the board.
The 1-1 swing and a well-hit ball deep to left field. Going and going. Goodbye, baseball. Off the line scoreboard. High above the lower deck in left field. Mike Zunino just crushes his ninth home run of the season. And yes, indeed, the Mariners get on the board here in the top of the third. A 1-0 lead over San Diego. And that baby was shot out of a cannon.
So 1-0 lead. The Mariners would add three more in the fourth inning. Brad Miller swats a two-run home run. He has, by the way, taken the American League lead for home runs for shortstops, his seventh of the year. So three runs in the fourth, one run in the third. So four runs, 4-0 lead. And at that point, all eyes on Mike Montgomery.
Here's the pitch on the way. Swing and a miss by Norris. Strike three. That's the second time that Montgomery has fanned Derek Norris. And for Mike Montgomery, that is strikeout number five.
Just racking them up. Racking up the Ks. Racking up everything except hits. Zero hits until the seventh inning.
The windup and the pitch. Swing and a line drive left field down the line. It's going to be a fair ball into the corner. over the wall in right field. It's going to be a ground rule double. And, folks, there is the first hit for the Padres in this ball game. Young Mike Montgomery had a no-hitter for 6 1/3 innings tonight here at Petco Park.
6 1/3 innings. He was inching closer and closer. Gives up the hit there. I'll give you something ironic about that hit, too, coming up in just a couple of moments. But give him credit after what had to be a letdown, knowing how far he came with it. He buckled back down, and Padres didn't get to him again.
Here's the 0-2 on the way. Swing and a miss. Strike three, and down goes Alonso. Two outs for the Padres here in the bottom of the ninth inning. That is strikeout number 7. And Mike Montgomery now just one out away from his second major league shutout.
Second major league shutout and second major league shutout in a row, which is pretty remarkable. Although things would get kind of dicey in the ninth inning, and it was more pitch count was the concern. After he walked Justin Upton, his pitch count getting in the very interesting zone for a young pitcher. It's funny, we spent so much time on the podcast yesterday talking about pitch counts. Montgomery was at 112 at that point facing the last hitter, but fortunately, he didn't have to wait long, throwing one pitch to complete the deal.
The pitch, swing and a fly ball into right field, and this has got to do it. Franklin Gutierrez out there waiting. He makes the catch, and it's over. And Mike Montgomery throws back-to-back shutouts in the big leagues. He blanks the Padres tonight by a score of 5-0 here at Petco Park. In his last outing, he shut out the Royals at home 7-0. He becomes one of only 4 Mariner pitchers in history to throw back-to-back shutouts.
4 Mariner pitchers in history, back-to-back shutouts. Remarkable. Also, think about this for a second. He becomes just the 3rd pitcher in the last 40 years of Major League Baseball to throw 2 shutouts within their first 6 starts. Yeah, keep that in mind. This was only start 6 in his career. 2 shutouts in first 6 starts. 3 pitchers have done it in the past 40 years, and Mike Montgomery is one of those. Here's what he had to say after the ball game.
Just kind of mixing it up, and, you know, fastball and cutter change and the curveball. I think, you know, I got ground balls and all those. It was just, you know, really just trying to mix it up and then, you know, kind of get him in between speeds a little bit. And, you know, I think Z did a really good job tonight. And, you know, I think we were on a really good page again. And, you know, I felt good and you know, try to just keep building off of it.
Like, a no-hitter big gets real in the seventh inning. Did you realize that? Did you have any idea what was it?
I knew, but because I was hitting, it was like, you know, I was kind of focused on hitting and kind of watching their pitcher in between innings where, you know, I normally wouldn't. But, you know, I think, you know, I knew about it, but I think really it was, I thought I did a good job just kind of blocking that out and blocking, you know, everything else out. Maybe, you know, I don't feel 100% out there, but I think it was just a matter of going and keep attacking and, you know, using that mindset as opposed to, you know, just trusting the defense, trusting his stuff.
You get a 3-run lead like that, it makes it a little easier as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it was great to get that lead. And, you know, it was kind of weird for me hitting a little bit, but when Z kind of hit that homer right before I got up there, it really kind of gave me a boost to just, you know, kind of be relaxed. And then when we put up those runs, it just, you know, gave me that even more confidence.
Hey, Salonta hits a double. Good pitch, bad pitch, one.
It was a bad pitch, you know, and he took advantage of it. It was first pitch cutter. I just left it down the middle, and he hit it hard. And you know, it's one of those that's going to happen. You know, you're going to hit pitches, and, you know, good pitches or bad pitches. So, you know, I just tried to not make too many of them.
Austin help you out. A couple of nice catches out there in center.
Oh yeah, those were really, really nice catches, and really kind of boosted it, you know, me a little bit. I think the team as well, because it was, you know, one of those is, and really, I think it was one, there was a no-hitter, 5th, maybe he did it, and when he made that, you know, it really kind of just like, okay, you know, I thought it was going to drop in, and he kind of came out of nowhere and caught it, so it was just pretty awesome.
Was that your family and friends, some of that little celebration there when you were doing your interview?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a lot of family and friends here, so it was cool, and, you know, I tried to block it out and just kind of pitch my game, but I think for them to kind of be here and experience that is pretty, pretty cool.
Is it much of a letdown when the ball drops?
Yeah, it's a little letdown, but, you know, it wasn't a good pitch, so, you know, I kind of almost expected that, and, I kind of had a couple no-hitters before going into 7th, 8th, 9th, and really once you get to that last part of the lineup, you have to, be even better than before. You have to make even better pitches because now they've seen you a few times, and, and I really wasn't able to do that to him, and it was the first pitch, so it's, it happens, and, I thought I did a good job of not really worrying about it, let it affect me, and just kind of kept making pitches.
And something that shouldn't be lost in any of this is he put together one of the best Junes in Mariners history. You look at the top ERAs in Mariners history for the month of June, and we look at starts of five or more. So you're looking at guys that started the entire month, five or six starts. You had Randy Johnson in 1997, a 0.92 ERA. He took a loss, too, which is remarkable. He was 4-1. I mean, how's that happen? 49 innings, he gave up 5 earned runs, and one of them a loss. Struck out 68. Huh. In June of 2009, Felix Hernandez had a 0.94 ERA. Jamie Moyer in 2002, a 1.01. Scott Bankhead in 1989 had a 1.05. Felix again last year, 2014, had a 1.22. You had Randy in 94, a 1.23. Felix again in 2008, a 1.38. Gilmesh in 2006, a 1.60. And now you can slide Mike Montgomery into that mix, a 1.62. In his very first month, there he is, a 1.62 ERA. Very impressive stuff. What about the skipper, Lloyd McClendon? Here's what he had to say about his hurler.
Pretty easy to sum up. I mean, Skip was outstanding. I don't know what to tell you. So he's been outstanding tonight. I thought he had it all working. I thought his breaking stuff was probably a little better tonight than it was his last outing. He took a no-hitter into the seventh inning, I believe. So it's pretty special.
See him bounce back. He gives up the hit and just really didn't seem to skip a beat. His mentality out there, I think, is something you guys have been learning a little bit about since.
Yeah, I mean, he's shown a lot of poise. And, again, I had no idea what to expect when we first got him. But, each and every outing, he impresses me even more. So and tonight was no different.
Hey, Lloyd, for all that, I mean, he didn't get to the point where he had over 50% strikes until like the sixth or seventh inning. And he was scrambling a little bit. But
he was scrambling a little bit, but I thought he made real good pitches when he needed to.
How much of a debate to send him back out on the ninth?
I don't think there was any really debate to send him back out. I think he was at 95, 96 pitches, and he was never really stressed other than the fifth inning. It got a little tedious when he got to 110. At that point, I got to make a decision.
Do you tell him he's going back out there, or is he even looking at you in that
point? No, I never even talked to him.
But you've got a starting pitcher that's on the mend coming back, and this is a kid we kind of thought would probably be here temporarily, but can you really send him back to Tacoma with the way he's pitched?
No, I don't have those answers. I'm sure Jack and I will sit down and try to figure all this out.
Be tough, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't have those answers.
I mean, he obviously can't do much more than that, can he, though?
I don't have those answers.
Offensively, you did enough. I mean, over the wall. And
yeah, we're better today. We're better, and we continue to get better. The bottom of the order did a nice job again tonight. So, we're still a work in progress, but we'll see how we do tomorrow.
Mike Montgomery also joins Dave Fleming, Mark Langston, and Matt Young as the only M's to throw two or more shutouts as a rookie. They're all left-handed, which is kind of funny, but just more evidence, as if you needed any more, about how remarkable last night was. How about his catcher, Mike Zunino? Not only caught the game for Mike Montgomery, also swatted a home run as well.
It's just been a constant work in progress with Edgar. Just pounding, the basics in there, and I mean, just sort of trusting my swing, and even I've been able to bring my approach into the game, and I'm getting pitches that are fitting that, and I'm trying not to miss them. I mean, that's the biggest thing, is getting pitches that hit and just barreling them up.
Is Edgar making an impact there? Really?
Yeah,
I mean, you've worked all along.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things where he's, very simplistic in what he says and how he wants to teach stuff, and it's one of those things that's sort of clicking with me. And what he's saying and sort of teaching is sort of registering and easier for me to apply right now.
Guy on the hill today. He comes out and it's a little bit, I don't want to say rocky, but not exactly smooth.
Rocky.
Okay. Well, how rocky?
For him, I mean, it was all about getting his off-speed stuff over. And the first couple innings, he didn't really have that. And I thought he did a good job of, pitching around with his fastball, moving locations to get ahead of guys. And I think in the later innings, he really found his off-speed stuff. And he did a good job of mixing the fastball early. I think we threw a lot of first-pitch fastballs. And it's just one of those things where it just shows that his stuff has late life and he's able to get away with some fastball
stuff. He's got a no-hitter going. How do you handle him at that point? How aware are you of that? Do you see anything different from him?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just that I try to get him through innings. I try to break it up into smaller sections and make it easier for him. And that's how I like to attack guys. And for him, he obviously had his stuff. I'm sure he was aware of it. And I want to say it may have been through four or five that I wasn't even thinking about. All of a sudden, looked at the scoreboard and said, "Oh wow, no hits!" I know he walked a couple and had a hit by pitch, but I thought he found his stuff really good late.
You never saw this guy until he got here. Mm-hmm. How much has he shown you?
A lot. I mean, he goes out and pitches. He competes. He's not scared to pitch the guys and attack guys, and I think that's helped him a lot. And he's got good stuff, and he's throwing all four pitches now for strikes and attacking guys. And usually that's a good recipe for success.
I mean, think about what he's done. Back-to-back shutouts, including a one-hitter. 18 innings, 6 hits, no runs, 17 strikeouts. I mean, that is remarkable stuff. Really remarkable. The young pitcher coming up. At one point this season, this year, just a few months ago, Tampa Bay had moved him to the bullpen so Montgomery could become a reliever. And here he is, just a couple of months later, throwing back-to-back shutouts, including a one-hitter. Oh, baseball, you are a funny game. I mean, that is amazing stuff. It really is. From where he was to where he is now. Unbelievable. Mike Montgomery, that was just a pleasure to watch. That was fun to watch as he ate up the Padres order. We'll talk a little bit about how he did it in just a second. First, let's hear from Brad Miller on another nice offensive night as he's starting to get the stick heated up.
Yeah, I think everybody, came out firing. After a nice day of rest, came out. Obviously, Mike was pretty lights out, so that always helps. But like you said, I think we did a great job of firing on all cylinders.
You personally at the plate, we've seen some good things. A little bit more consistently, it seems like, for the last week. How much is firing? You said that you came out firing. Pretty impressive today.
Yeah, just trying to get in there and have a good, clear mindset and take some aggressive swings. And like you said, just be more consistent and, hit, four or five balls hard tonight, But, just trying to get in there and be ready to go.
All right, so let's dive into what he's doing a little bit about what's working so well. And to illustrate it so well, Colin O'Keefe tweeted out, "A great example of his changeup and what it looks like and the movement on it. It is outstanding." I retweeted it as well, so you can go to @GaryHillJr. or Colin O'Keefe to find exactly what it looks like, because it's worth taking a look. So go to the timeline, take a look, because it's worth it. And you dive into the changeup. Now, including the game last night, opponents are only batting 131 against this change. You remember after the Kansas City game, Ned Yost, we played that audio. He talked about the changeup. That's all he talked about. The changeup made the difference. And you look at it, you break down the numbers, 18 of his 29 strikeout victims have come with that last pitch being the changeup. That has been his out pitch. And it's funny, opponents 5 of 38, again, that 131 average against this change. Only one extra base hit. They're not squaring it up very well either. Ironically, that extra base hit was the only hit the Padres got in the game last night. and it's one that he talked about. You heard it a second ago. He talked about he just left it over the plate. But it has really been a devastating pitch, and it's illustrated perfectly in what you'll see. But just picture a bird of prey diving for lunch, you know, soaring high in the sky, and then just zook, just diving to the earth. That's what it looks like. Nasty, nasty stuff. And it's funny, nothing, you know, you watch him pitch and nothing really is overwhelming. You know, he'll sit about 90 miles per hour on the fastball. But that change, when you look at it, I mean, that's special. And he has been special in his first six starts. Very, very exciting stuff. The Mariners take game one. So game two today, 12:40, Taiwan Walker will go to the hill. Mike Montgomery with, I think, the second best ERA in the American League for the month of June. And Taiwan Walker, I think, is sitting at 10. So he's been rolling as well, and we'll see if he can keep it going against the San Diego Padres. He has been a lot of fun to watch. You'll hear, okay, this is the perfect transition. We're going to hand it off now to Aaron Goldsmith and Mike Blowers. They're going to start the conversation talking about Taiwan Walker and something an opposing pitching coach shared with Aaron Goldsmith about what Taiwan Walker looks like on the mound. It's pretty great.
2-1 on Blowers and Butcher. The 2-1 pitch on the way now. Swung on and a fly ball hit to deep center field and way back. I've got the power. Evans to the track. He's to the wall. Grand slalom time. Mike Blowers. I've got the power. Has cleared him off with a four-run blast. And all of a sudden, it is 9-2. A mammoth home run deep over the left center field fence as Edmonds went back as far as he could. So Mike Blowers with his 11th home run, four more RBIs, and he has six tonight.
Welcome back, Mariners Sunday Magazine. It's the rubber game of this three-game series. Felix up on the mound, so happy Felix Day. Blow, it's good to see you, bud.
Good to be seen. And being here at this ballpark, listening to that from Dave Niehaus, they didn't used to have the rocks out there where the waterfall is. They just had a big camera tower. But looking at it, it would have landed up there in the water somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're trying to say it would have landed far away.
Well, I didn't say it. Dave Niehaus did.
Well, I always like that call. It's a fine call.
Mike Butcher, the pitching coach of the Angels.
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Boy, you know, before we go any further, Butcher, Mike Butcher's a fun guy to talk with. And we were talking with Butcher yesterday. So game one was already in the books. Taiwan Walker had pitched and pitched very well. And we asked Butch, hey, what'd you make of Taiwan Walker in game one? And he says, how big is that guy? It was like, he goes, it was like looking at LeBron James on the mound, which I thought that's about as good of a way as you can sum up Taiwan Walker.
Yeah.
Because he's in a league that, of course, is dominated by large men, he really stands out, which is not easy to do.
No, and that's exactly what Rick Waite wants from him, too, that he wants him to be intimidating on the mound, and I think he's getting there.
He's getting there.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of pitching, Tommy Allison, who is the Mariners' director of pro scouting, and just a wonderful guy to talk baseball with. He's been in the game for a long, long time. He's been with the Mariners since the fall of 2012 in that role. And Tommy's job is a really cool one from the standpoint of, as a director of pro scouting, he scouts teams from big league clubs like, say, the Houston Astros, all the way down to the minor leagues. That is pro ball, after all. And we were talking with Tommy yesterday outside the dugout, and he was telling us that he had just recently seen the California League, Carolina League All-Star game. They combine their All-Star game every year. And he said that there were four pitchers in that game who threw 100. Now, it's essentially a showcase game, and you're not going very long, so you're out there and you're just blowing gas. But nevertheless, four guys in high A throwing triple digits. And Tommy, in a way that he does so well, broke it down very simply. And, Mike, I'm interested in your thoughts on this. He said in so many words, there's no tool that's being coached more effectively right now in baseball than velocity. And we see that at the major league level, and it's so obvious, and yet I hadn't really thought about it, that it, of course, starts in the minor leagues, and that's a huge emphasis to the minors right now.
It actually starts before that, I think. Right now I have a son. He's 18 years old, and about a year and a half ago, he's a pitcher, a left-handed pitcher. And about a year and a half ago, he started working on different programs to increase his velocity, and it worked. and he'll go right back into that program again. So it really starts even younger, Aaron, when you look around. And then once these guys get into the minor leagues, they also they hold their pitch counts back. And like you said, these guys know that they don't have to go out and throw 115 pitches. They're going to be really regimented on how many pitches they're going to throw, so they cut it loose. And they throw more. And I think that there's a lot to that. There's really a lot to that. And I think that velocity is such a big part of this game today. We talk about it every night when we watch these clubs go and guys coming out of the bullpen and what they're capable of doing. You can throw 95 miles an hour and get somewhere in the strike zone, you're probably going to have a job up here.
The dynamics of minor league pitching is so fascinating because we've heard on our pregame interviews, we've heard two of the very best pitchers in baseball talk about the pros and cons of pitch counts in the minor leagues. Max Scherzer has told us that when he pitched at the University of Missouri and the pitch counts were like 120, he said he learned more about pitching from pitch 100 to pitch, say, 120 than he did 1 through 99. And Chris Archer told us recently when the Rays were in town, this was a young man who was a prospect coming up, and his pitch counts were in that 70 to 80 pitch mark in the minor leagues. And he said in so many words that he really thinks that in some ways it limited him because you don't get that feeling of what it's like to pitch in even the seventh inning and sometimes in the sixth. Can you remember when you were in the minors, Mike, was there this just overall knowledge for every hitter and every player that that starting pitcher on the mound probably isn't going to throw many more pitches than maybe 90?
No. They watched it, but the starters would go out and throw 100, 110 pitches at okay. that point. They didn't start cutting them back, and that's what a lot of them do now. As you mentioned, 70, 80 pitches is it. But these guys would throw 100 to 110. And then when they get to the big leagues, get a year or two in, next thing you know, they're throwing 120 to 130.
Sure.
Yeah, and I agree with both of those gentlemen. I think that you have to, first of all, you have to find out if you can even do it. Some guys just can't do it. And how are you going to be able to get through it?
You just lose the stamina. You don't have the horsepower.
Right. And can you still be effective with that? Can you hit your spots? Can you sink the ball a little bit more? Can you throw your breaking ball over for a strike when you're behind? All those different things. Those are factors that I think that pitchers struggle with today because of that.
And one of the things that kind of takes us even to a deeper level is that if you're a minor league pitcher, say you're one of the guys in the Carolina-Cal League All-Star game and you threw 99, you threw 100 miles an hour, the thought for sure for any one of those young pitchers is, hey, the harder I throw, the sooner I get up to a big league bullpen, for example, and can start being in the major leagues. But today, if you're throwing, now 100's a different level, but if you're throwing 95, 96, you're kind of a dime a dozen in the big leagues right now, assuming you can command it, because how many bullpens do we see that happens? And really, the emphasis should be on command, should it not? Because if we've seen it, guys who throw 92 with command, those are the deadly ones. 100 can get waffled.
I would look at it if I were one of those guys and I was able to go 94 to 96.
Uh-huh.
To me, they're looking at it the wrong way. You're right. Every bullpen has three or four of those guys. Why not try to be a starter? Why not try to lengthen things out? Why not get yourself stretched out to the point to where maybe your fastball drops to 92 because it's the seventh inning, and now you have to pitch and learn those things? Because if you have that kind of fastball and you learn to use it, not all the time, like you mentioned Archer. Archer has the ability to throw 97 miles an hour. He doesn't do it all game, but he'll pick his spots. All of a sudden he has you 1-2, boom, 97 on the inside corner, you're done. I think that is an art that not many guys have picked up on, and I think that they – would probably be better served and make a whole lot more money being able to do that.
Even if you go back and look at Max Scherzer's near-perfect game, the Tapata elbow away from a perfecto, the no-hitter against the Pirates. By the way, Tapata was designated for assignment today, which was kind of interesting. He started out 91-92 in that game, and by the 6th and the 7th, he was throwing 96-97, and it kind of seemed like an example of one of those, a mature pitcher who knows, it's kind of like a golf swing, right?
Yep.
You don't have to go out and give max effort on every pitch. You can have a little more command in this case. And then when you need it, it's in the tank.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the guy that did that before Scherzer did that was Verlander.
For sure.
And they spent some time together. And now Verlander's on the other end. Verlander, he can't go get 98 anymore. He's trying to figure out on the other end throwing in the low and times mid-90s. So he's trying to figure that out. I can remember, Aaron, but that's been a process in this league for a long time. And one of the first ones that comes to mind is a guy that pitched right here in Anaheim, in Frank Tanana. He came to the big leagues, and he was one of the hardest throwers in the game. And he pitched forever because next thing you know, he's throwing 87, but he figured it out. Use a changeup, slower breaking ball, spot your fastball. He was able to do that. Not many guys who are power pitchers have the ability to do that.
Felix.
Felix is a great example of it. But I think that if Felix, if you went to Felix and you asked him, he would tell you he could still throw 96 miles an hour. And I think he can. It's just not as important to him. And I think putting the ball in play early, especially early in the game, helps his pitch count. He's more efficient. He can get deeper in the game. And then later in the game, he's not out of gas. But I think that he's one of the ultimate pitchers in this game.
I mean, he's already kind of reinvented himself, and he's 29 years old. And he's got 11 years of the big leagues now.
Yeah. I mean, when he first came up, he was 96, 97 with one of the best curveballs you're ever going to see. Then eventually the changeup came, and then he started sinking his fastball a little bit more, and it was consistent with his slider. And he's just a long day at the ballpark for anybody. So, but I think that if he felt that he needed to do it, he could do it.
Sure.
He just, you know, his four-seamer, he grips it like a four-seamer, but he sinks it, which is unusual.
Huh. And he we know that last year he was working on a cutter, but his fastball can get so much natural cut that he doesn't have to throw
right.
a cutter.
Yeah, ask Mike Zunino about it.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll tell you how difficult it is to catch him because at times I don't know that Felix knows how much it's going to cut or when it's going to.
I can't wait to hit it. I can't wait till Felix is in his, like, 23rd year. He will be the greatest junk ball pitcher in the history of baseball.
He'll still get people out.
It'll be the most beautiful thing to watch. He'll throw a no-hitter, you know, at 39 years old, and he'll be topping out at who knows what.
86.
Yeah, it'll be priceless. We think this is fun now to watch. Just wait till then. Wait till you're 23.
And he'll still compete just as hard, too.
Oh, yeah. He'll be fired up. Blow, as always. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Aaron. It was fun.
There he is, Mike Blowers.
And here it is, Aaron Goldsmith back this time with San Diego Padres skipper Pat Murphy.
Well, Pat, it's barely been two full weeks since you've become the new manager for the San Diego Padres. What have these roughly 14 days been like for you so far?
It's been exciting. It's been wonderful. It's been filled. Every day is filled. Real busy, lots coming at me. It's been a great learning experience. I got no complaints.
It seems like today one of the biggest challenges facing a major league ball player, whether it's a pitcher or a position player, is the possibility of information overload between the scouting reports, charts, video, and even much, much more than that. Can the same hold true for a manager, the amount of information that is placed on your desk every day to sort through?
Yeah, no question. A lot of things coming at you. You got to separate what's important. You know, you have to say no to things and that you know – you know, might be important to somebody else, but it just isn't on your agenda today, and you don't want to be arrogant about it, but you just got to say no, you know. Quite possibly you have to sift through what's important and what's not.
Your first win as a major league manager came against the Oakland A's, and Pat, the postgame story after that game said that in celebration, your players showered you with a three-layer combination of beer, champagne, and baby powder. What was that post-game ceremony, for lack of a better term, like for you?
It was scary because I thought the headline was going to read, interim manager gets first win, has heart attack. Because that's just how I felt. You know, it was cold, very cold. But exhilarating, and once I got through it and realized I was okay, that, it was a great celebration.
You come to the Padres after an incredibly successful run as a college coach, 1,000 career wins as a college manager, most notably with Notre Dame, Arizona State as well. And while you were in Tempe, you coached a current Mariner, Willie Bloomquist. What are your memories of Willie Boom Boom?
Yeah, he's one of my best friends in the world, you know, like it's hard to talk about, you know, what we've been through together, both on and off the field. We never lost touch. I consider him family, and I mean that. I mean, I'm privileged enough to be the godfather of Layla, one of his daughters, and she was born on October 11th. And he's special, you know, friend for life. Family, he's helped me an incredible amount. So I love Willie. Yeah, it's the truth.
That's amazing. And there's a tremendous story about Willie in college where there was a returning player who did not have a scholarship, and Willie said in so many words that his family was in a financial position where he didn't necessarily need the scholarship. He came to you and basically was turning his scholarship in if you needed it to better serve the team. Is that something that you remember pretty well?
Yeah. We played for a national championship the next year, and, you know, Willie's that's who he is. He's selfless, and it's all about the team for Willie, and that's why he's had, I don't know how many years he's played, 40 or 45 years, I tell him. And, you know, the guy is an incredible person. He's an incredible leader. I'd want him part of any team I was ever part of.
We mentioned your college days as a coach. First of all, why is it that in college they're known as coaches, and in professional baseball, of course, we know them as managers? Why is that?
Just tradition, and, yeah, it's a different world. I mean, my 6 years in the minor leagues has really helped me. A different world from college, really different.
And is that why we don't see many coaches from major Division I programs make the transition into pro ball?
There's a lot of factors. A lot of factors involved that wouldn't lend that self to being the way to go. You know, like once you've been a head coach in college at a big place, I mean, you're financially pretty set, you know, and you're not in a position to take a $40,000 A-ball job. And that's what you'd need to do. You know, you'd need to come back to A-ball and learn everything, you know, soup to nuts. I was lucky enough that the Padres and Randy Smith gave me a chance to come back and say, hey, if you're willing to do this, then you got to start at the bottom. And it was great. It was a great exercise, and I'm glad I did it that way, and I'm very thankful it's led to this.
Any particular memories that you might have coming to Seattle to play the Huskies as a member, or a coach, rather, of the Arizona State Sun Devils?
Many, many memories. We had a game so cold one night. We turned five double plays. I'll never forget it. I want to say it was like a 14-inning game, and Linscomb might have been involved. And I had the players in between innings go on the bus and get warm because it was so – the bus was parked right behind the dugout there, you know, in that old Huskies park and in the gravel. And the players would get on the bus in between innings just because it was so cold in the dugout. And we ended up winning the game, which makes it an even better memory. But, yeah, it's a great place. I love that place. Love the people in the Northwest. Yeah, recruited a bunch of people from there. John Lester signed with us. And it's always been a Travis Snyder, always been a fertile ground, and always been just great people up there. So I've always enjoyed it. And we started a tournament in the Kingdom back in 1990, I think, when I was at Notre Dame. Chuck Armstrong was in the lobby, and I walked in, and I was recruiting Pat Leahy and the Yakima, and I had a layover in Seattle. Went to see the King Dome, saw Chuck Armstrong, and said, hey, let's do a baseball tournament here. He goes, yeah, let's do it. And sure enough, we did it, and did it for 5 or 6 years, and it was just a great experience to be part of it and work with the Mariners and work with people in Seattle getting that done.
Pat, there was an article at the time of your hiring that had just a very brief mention of you and, at one point, maybe not a career, but experience as a boxer. Is this true? Do you have boxing in your background?
I do. And that's not real flattering sometimes when you think of what kind of intelligence it takes to do that. But I just always toiled in it. You know, I was never a professional, and I never was any good. But I enjoyed it. I got to say, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the workout, and I enjoyed when the bell rang, the overwhelming fear that you had to overcome in order to take another step. So I had a bunch of fights, and again, I wasn't very good, but I enjoyed it, and I did it. And I still, to be honest with you, once in a while, I would still train that way or spar or whatever. I enjoyed it, and I played all the sports, so I didn't have time to jump into it full time, thank God, because you know, it doesn't end well usually in that sport. So, yeah, it was good to me. It taught me a lot.
Pat, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you for the time.
It's my pleasure, Aaron.
See you later!